Hey, celebrate and rejoice. It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. Not to be confused with Fly Me to the Moon, the song, or the fragrance for men.
Okay, so it's the day before. Hopefully, Middlesbrough finally get 3 points on the board against Queen's Park Rangers. Is it going to happen, or is it a case of, well, it'd be better if Queen's Park Rangers were actually in the Carabao Cup, because then it'd be guaranteed a win. We'll find out over the next 35, 40 minutes. Rob Nichols back with us. Thomas Bartley back with us. Sean Wright is back with us, of course. Rob, would you like to take it away, please?
Well, it's been... I think the fanzine cover speaks volumes. Annual slow start special issue. It has been like a feature of the last few years, hasn't it? Unfortunately, no matter who's in the hot seat, that we make a really poor start to things. And this season has been the slowest for absolutely years. Fortunately, the only sort of bright spot this week has been the League Cup win against Bolton. We didn't manage to rally, did we, from the League Cup win at Huddersfield? But I'm hoping that the manner of the victory at Bolton, the way that we really gelled together in the last few minutes, I'm hoping that we can bring something from that into the QPR game, which I think all of us agree is a really, really important, I don't like to say must win so soon in the season, but we really do need to win it, don't we?
Sean, we're almost talking about a six pointer, really, and it seems crazy, literally, just in the first Saturday in September. But I don't think anybody quite expected, shall we say, the loss of Tuba Akbom and Cameron Archer to have so impacted the side.
No, I think you're right, and I think it's really difficult. And Michael Carrick's done quite a good job of trying to diffuse any sort of overreactions. But with us starting so slowly last year, and then kicking into gear sort of post-November when he came in, I think everybody really was looking forward to getting off to a good start. And when it doesn't happen, it's quite frustrating, because the longer, albeit a very small run at the minute, the longer it goes on, the more frustrating it gets.
Thomas, are you worried? I mean, obviously you refer in the magazine, Fly Me to the Moon, to the arrival of Lucas Engel and Emmanuel Latte-Lath helping to assuage some concern. And obviously Latte-Lath has actually got... off the mark already. Engel perhaps still having one or two problems. Is the glass half full from your own perspective?
I think that most Borough fans will be prepared to allow some time now for all of these new signings to gel together. I think that it has been a few months of such transition that I think we need a bit of time to allow this team, as it is now a team, to play together. I think there's going to be, I would expect to see quite a lot of significant tactical changes and things as well. I mean, obviously, we've got this massive deficit with Akpom and Archer and so forth leaving. So I think, I hope that most fans will be prepared to give it at least, you know, a few weeks before anyone starts, you know, losing their heads. You know, even if results don't start flooding in, you know, we need a bit of time to allow things to settle down. And hopefully Saturday can be the start of that, really.
Interesting, you comment on the introduction of electronic ticketing on the turnstiles. Is that a case of, well, welcome to the 21st century?
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, obviously, it's not been done all in one sweep, which I think if it had, it would have been a lot more disastrous. It's very tough. Any changes are always people always respond in maybe a little bit bemused, thinking, why do things have to change? What's wrong with the current system? You know, I was at Wimbledon a couple of months ago when on the first day there was massive delays due to security changes and things like that. And, you know, people can very easily get frustrated. I think people understand that this is the natural course of things now, you know, the natural direction of things. But hopefully that nothing's done in a way that ever discriminates against anyone that isn't very, you know, tech savvy. But also people that can't deal with queues, you know, that there needs to be awareness that when queues are going to be performing, when there's new introductions to this, new expansions to this, that people aren't affected too much, because obviously people want to get in the ground and get in the seat and enjoy the match. So I think a bit like the Borough team, maybe it'll be a case of watching and waiting and seeing how it develops.
I mean, Rob, from somebody who can remember the time where obviously your ticket was indeed in a book of season tickets and was torn out at the
Yeah.
gate, etc., those days seemingly gone forever.
Well, we still have tickets for away games at the moment, and I think a lot of people would prefer some sort of system, some sort of digital system to come in there, because you often you're waiting for the post to come, and you don't know whether sometimes it could go down to the whether you set how what time you set off for the match as to whether your ticket has arrived or not. But yeah, there's still ticket collectors, of course. And their tickets collections are going to be sort of the there's going to be like an end date for them now. It's amazing how quickly these things progress. But it looks like lots of clubs this season have gone down the digital route, and we saw absolute chaos at Arsenal, where the match was kickoff was put back. At Coventry, the kickoff should have been put back because most people, it seemed to me, most people were outside the ground at kickoff time. But yeah, if it's brought in by block by block as it is at Middlesbrough, then and everybody is allowed to use their cards if they can't or don't have a smartphone, for instance, then it'll work. But it is the way of the world, isn't it? As Thomas was saying, when you go into a supermarket and you see that you're suddenly filtered off into the there's less and less people actually at the checkouts, and there's more and more doing it yourself. Even Lidl and Aldi, and there's no way that you can do it as quickly as the people that do it for you.
It's a problematic issue, but that's for another time. Sean, you've been doing some mathematical calculations about average squad ages and come up with the line that Sunderland have an average squad age of 23 years of age. Middlesbrough, of course, in joint 11th place with Stoke City with an average age of 25 years and 81 days. Did you not have sufficient time on your hands, or was it just a case of, well, you wanted to just address that fact?
Yeah, it's probably more of an indictment on my own character than the fact that I wanted to look at all those figures. But I just found it, even myself, I've found myself churning out the line about us having a lot of young players, and more so the new recruitment model, the fact that most of our players, aside from the goalkeepers that we've signed, are all 24 and under, which I think is a good thing, and it's a good way of making us more sustainable. But sometimes we can be guilty of saying we've got a young squad, and sort of the championship isn't forgiven, as I said in my article, and it won. There's no what's the word I'm looking for? It doesn't discriminate. So the fact that we have quite a lot of young players, there's lots of other clubs also that have got a lot of young players, and like I say, our neighbour Sunderland have got a lot of youngsters. So we just need to find a way to gel those players, hopefully sooner rather than later, and just find a way of amassing points, even if we're not, the most aesthetically pleasing during the game. It's just a matter of getting some points on the board, I think.
I mean, the challenges that have been sort of present seem to have kind of been almost a hangover from the back end of last season. And there are, of course, folk who will say, yes, well, Michael Carrick should have played Tjuba Akpom then and so on, and we might have been a Premier League side by now. Do you go along with that line, or is it a case of, look, you can't, hindsight is 2020, and maybe those sort of things were a different line and another time, basically? Sean.
Yes, it's a difficult one. With regards to, do you mean playing Tuba at the end of last season, do you mean, or
Well, it seemed to be one of the lines that certainly pundits seemed to be saying, why wasn't he playing, basically? And then, of course, when he did come on, it was almost too late, basically, that side of things.
yeah, I get that, and we did lose a lot of momentum. There's no getting away from that. It's one of those things, in hindsight, maybe protecting him, and it didn't work out, but I'm sure Michael will be all the better for that experience, and he'll know next time round. But as Thomas alluded to in his article, I think we do pin a lot upon the fact that Tuba got so many goals, but it was very much everybody chipped in. We've lost a lot of players that had a massive impact and a lot of goal involvements, and that's not just sort of Ramsey and Archer as well. That's also sort of Ryan Giles, who supplied a lot of the crosses for Tuba. So I think we just need to sort of realign and think about the way that we spread those goals out. And I think one of the ways maybe that often goes amiss, we don't score many from set pieces. Whether that's direct or from corners, it's something that we don't really latch onto, and I think it's something where we can improve. So I love the free flowing football, and there'll be a lot of goals missed from those players that we've just mentioned. But I think it's just about finding ways to sort of spread that burden across the squad, I think.
Rob, we can pretty much confirm, as this is being produced on transfer deadline day, that Middlesbrough haven't put in a £150 million bid for Mo Salah from Liverpool, and which indeed has been rejected from Al Ittihad, who basically sort of have offered 150 million. Extraordinary. However, on the plus front, Lewis O'Brien and Sam Greenwood from Nottingham Forest and Leeds United, respectively, have been signed. And in addition to that, it looks as though we've got Cambuur fullback Alex Bangura signed on a 4-year deal. So, I mean, presumably, the due diligence has been done with respect to this. It's the Dutch side, SC Cambuur, that actually currently holds Sierra Leone international Alex Bangura. He's 24. He's scored 5 goals so far in 113 games for the side. Are you excited? Is it a case of, well, thank goodness we've signed some people actually in there, because we do need to obviously fill the gap caused by, as we said, the players we've lost?
Yeah, I am. I think they all look like they all look like good signings. Of course, that Greenwood and O'Brien have both played in the Premier League, and obviously Forest have got, even though they've lost players today, they've got a very, very big squad. Leeds are sort of sort of adjusting to coming down, and then there's the promising player, an international player coming from Netherlands, and interestingly, he's going to be competing now for that left back spot. So that makes, with the angle has got, so it's good. I think it looks like a change of policy, in that I think we realized at the end of last season all of a sudden that we had, there were too many vital cogs in that side that were only there for a loan period. Your goalkeeper's gone, your left backs who supplies all the goals, it Archer, who was like the second highest goal scorer, Ramsey, who was like a really vital player towards the end. You take them out of the side, and Michael Carrick suddenly realizes that you've got, you're not starting again, but you are you, well, we can see where we are in the league as a result of that, and that's why it how it's a really big problem for the championship. How do you build from one season to another? Because wherever you are, you lose players, but he's suggesting that we lost too many vital players all in one go, and obviously didn't even get the money for them because they were loan players. So it's good to get these additional the two additional loan guys in who will really help. But I don't think they're going to be they're not going to be absolutely vital components, if you see what I mean, like a goalkeeper or Ryan Giles and Archer were. Yeah, quite excited about it anyway.
Thomas, what's the feeling in the Bartley household? Is it a case of cautious optimism that the season starts here?
I think, as Rob said there, it's a very fine balance, isn't it, really? As all these championship teams try to avoid coming into breaches of FFP and all these things, and obviously loan, that's the attraction of loan players, and we can't say that it didn't work in our favour last season. But I think that, every new signing comes with a bit of jeopardy. There's always a, we've had as many flops really through the years as we have, absolute wonder kids and things. So we do need to be conscious of that. But I think that the signings we've made seem to be very targeted. I thought that earlier in the window as well, to be honest. Even some of the players that we signed right at the start of the summer, they seem to be players with a long-term view in mind. And I'd much rather that than scrambling, I'm not a huge fan of the whole transfer deadline day, furore and the excitement that it seems to generate among some people, really. I'd much rather us have had the business done going into the season. But as things being as they are, I think we look set to go into the second month of the season a lot stronger than the first. And as I said at the start, really, I just hope that things that fans give things time to gel, and that we can see what our best shape and our best starting 11 is going forward, because I think some people would say that we're not too sure on that right now, even though we've been playing with quite a similar lineup to begin. Now we've got these new players, we're going to need to reassess things, I think.
And in a real sense, of course, the international break comes at a pretty good time because whatever the results about QPR, obviously we're looking for a 3-pointer, there is a break then to hopefully allow Carrick to effectively work more effectively with the side and develop them. You talked about obviously decent players and various other things. Jimmy Flynn's always a decent player, and he always writes about decent player, doesn't he, Rob? And he's produced an epic, which I think might have actually. I'm sure I might have seen this in a local newspaper before Fly Me to the Moon. But you know, obviously, I mean, I thought that Jimmy had an exclusive contract with Fly Me to the Moon. But never mind, that's okay. We could work through that. Are you ready to deliver, as ever, the ode to Captain Fantastic?
Yes, Captain Fantastic, and we're referring, of course, to Tony Mowbray. Captain Fantastic. Tony Mowbray was an exceptional footballer and man. Middlesbrough FC's legendary homegrown talisman.
Born and raised in Saltburn by the Sea, one of Borough's finest stars he came to be.
A centre back with iron ore at his very core. In Borough's darkest hour, he came to the fore.
On field, Borough were newly relegated to the third tier. Off field, bankruptcy and liquidation was a real fear.
With fans and players deserting the club en masse, Borough faced a double obstacle seemingly impossible to pass.
Thankfully, a last gasp financial escape route Borough found. While on field, fortunes underwent a dramatic change around.
Manager Bruce Rioch handed Tony the captaincy, and an inspired appointment it proved to be.
Putting Borough's off-field financial tribulations aside, Tony dramatically rallied Borough's fledgling side.
Young, inexperienced, loyal lads, barely out of junior football, have having foregone wages, rallied as one to their captain's call.
Tony, the son of a scaffolder by trade, an on-field survival platform for Borough made.
A centre half in the traditional classic mould, filled with an instinctive combative spirit of old.
Physical contact his strongest suit of all, a master at disrupting attacks and winning the ball.
From a position of Borough in danger of imminent extinction, he launched an on-field fight back with distinction.
Under his guidance, Borough's young team matured and gelled. And in successive promotion seasons, gloriously excelled.
With supporters flooding back and black clouds gone, a Mowbray-inspired Borough were promoted back to Division One.
Previously unknown young footballers achieved fame along the way, courtesy of Captain Fantastic, the magnificent Tony Mowbray. Yeah, an epic, basically, an epic in all sorts of ways. We really actually need to bring in both Thomas and Sean to actually read the things around as well when we actually confirm that all's well with the whole system. But Thomas, what are your thoughts on Jimmy Flynn's ode to Mogga, who indeed was one of our first ever interviewees back in the day? And back in the day when I was actually teaching at Ormsby Comprehensive, he was kind enough to actually come and speak to the pupils as well. And great excitement was had by all when Mogga indeed turned up at what used to be Ormsby Comprehensive. Of course, I maintain, as he always says himself, he learned it all from Rob Nichols, as you can see there, quite categorically. It's part and parcel of the whole thing. Anyway, Thomas, your thoughts on the poem?
Yeah, brilliant. I think it's probably that whole 86 story is probably the best. I mean, obviously it wasn't great at the time, was it? But probably the best story in our history, really. Coming from absolute bottom, really, and absolute no hopes, and really everyone just trying to scramble for anything that we could say. And obviously there was the famous match at Hartlepool, which helped us to kick our season off
Before
and
you were
stave
born.
off. Well, yes, it was, but
I suspect.
the debt that we owe Hartlepool goes long into the present day, I think. But yeah, it is. I don't think he's had the best window though, has he, Tony Mowbray at Sunderland? They seem to have been losing a lot of players. I'm not sure he's the happiest manager in the championship right now, but yeah.
Unfortunately, if you will actually decide to actually hook up with a side up the A19, you've got to actually deal with those challenges as and when they occur. Sean, I suspect you also weren't born back in the days of the glories of 1986 and Tony Mowbray's header against Aston Villa.
Well, I was actually born in 83, but I've got a story myself in about Mogga, and I absolutely love him and idolised him when I was younger. And I grew up in East Cleveland and went to a primary school in Loftus, and he actually visited, being from Saltburn, he visited. I remember just being absolutely awestruck by this giant of a man, and he probably went some way to shaping my sort of life as a Borough fan. I just wish his tenure when he was with us was slightly different. I don't think he was maybe backed as well as some of the other managers were, but obviously as a club
he didn't have any Strachan bonus, did he? No Gordon, no wee Gord bonus to actually deal with.
He had quite a lot to clear up, and I still think he did an admirable job. But yeah, Mogga will always be a hero.
Yeah, speaking of quite a lot to clear up, that's still the case in my bathroom. But anyway, enough of such stuff. That's another issue entirely, as Rob will actually attest to. Okay, so Rob, the Women's World Cup has been and gone. We know the result, obviously. The Spanish football president will probably have to resign. Whatever. That's another issue entirely. But you've given centre spread to a very important, very significant story as far as Middlesbrough women are concerned. As we said, this is the first side, or the first time, that effectively they are professionally connected with the whole thing. Share with us your interview and so on in the centre spread of Fly Me to the Moon.
Yeah, I actually did this interview in the summer when the first announcement was made that Middlesbrough women were going to be part of the Middlesbrough Football Club. And there was one person at this press conference that was beaming, absolutely delighted. And Maria Wieczorek has been there from the very start of a Middlesbrough women's team, which at the time was called Cleveland Spartans, back in the mid-70s. She's somebody that goes back to a time when women weren't allowed to play on FA pitches, which was that ban that stretched through a lot of the 20th century. And she goes back from the Cleveland Spartans, and then she says in this interview, it was a really proud day for her when Cleveland Spartans became Middlesbrough Ladies, and then she could be part of the club, in a part of associated with the club that she'd always supported from being a young girl and going in the Holgate End with her dad or whatever. And but she went on to manage them. She played for England, but now. And subsequently, she worked for the MFC Foundation and going out into schools. But now, of course, everything sort of happened so quickly because of the involvement of the women's game on the back of the Lionesses' successes, etc. And she's just kind of living the dream that she's able to go along and see Middlesbrough women and know that they're part of the borough that she absolutely loves and has been working as part of. All the subsequent life after playing.
Just think, if she never actually knocked on the door to see David Geddes, football in the community officer at Middlesbrough, it may never have actually transpired.
No, I know, and what she is saying as well is because she goes into the schools and the junior schools and she takes them for PE, and she can see the sort of energy that they get, just like Sean was saying with Tony Mowbray going to that visit, and you were saying at Ormsby School, she can see that when she goes into those schools, how all the faces light up. But she also says that when she walks around, they've got the names of the women's England women's team are on the lips as much as the England men's team, and that's boys and girls. And this is going to inspire a lot of junior kids to get fit, to be into football. And it's going to make them proud, and it's going to show a pathway where the future for the Middlesbrough women's team is hopefully a professional future. And this is going to show a pathway for all those girls that it's not just boys but girls that could make a profession out of football.
I think certainly the World Cup itself proved to be singularly successful. Thomas, did you catch any of the matches, or was it a case of, I've got too much stress dealing with the men's side without worrying about the women's side?
I think all in all, it's a far more exciting experience watching England women's team play, to be honest, particularly in major competitions. I thought particularly that semi-final with Australia was really good. The goals were fantastic. And it's just been so great. I think even the difference between the Euros last year and the World Cup this year, we're seeing these smaller nations develop at a really rapid rate. I think that, you know, if anything, for all the successes England are having, I think they're definitely feeling those smaller countries at their heels. as the sort of Nigeria and Colombia games particularly showed. So it's a very exciting time, I think. But you know, Mari or Maz is testament to that sort of bridging generation, really, that have seen both sides of the coin. You know, the absolute suppression, really, of involvement and participation in women's football, and now it blossoming at a wide level. Obviously, there's still a long way to go, but this announcement in these last few months about the Middlesbrough women's team is a big part of that, hopefully, and we can see that in our own local scale change massively.
Indeed, a 50-year ban, and now it's all opening up into a whole brave new world. Sean, Forest Green, of course, we thought were actually going to be a pioneer in terms of getting a woman manager, the first nod in that direction, but they pretty much axed that fairly rapidly. Can you see the day where, as again, you may recall a series called The Manageress with Sherry Lungi, which was a work of fiction back in the day. Do you think that's ever going to occur?
Yeah, why not? I think it can. And I think it's great that we're talking about these things and these people that are, it's a bit like the story of the original Lionesses. It's great that retrospectively they're getting this light shed on them, because probably at the time I'm sure there were times where they wondered if what they were doing was making a difference. So it's great that we can acknowledge those sort of stories now that the profile is being elevated and, you know, we can look back at those some of those original stories of war, if you like, and how difficult it was for them. Similar, and I know I mentioned it probably too many times on the football podcast, but in boxing, it's like people like Jane Couch who, you know, set the bar and set the standard and fight those tough fights early on in their career to enable, you know, young female sports persons to be able to have this platform now and this opportunity.
Let's talk silverware, because the Carabao Cup is still a live trophy when it comes to Middlesbrough. And being drawn away to Bradford, it's not bad, is it? I mean, Thomas, you must be reasonably happy that Mark Hughes, Sparky, of course, or just basically a Manchester United thug to those of us from the other side, would have basically sort of said, yeah, we should be able to handle them.
Yeah, I think you know, there's certainly a lot of worse draws out there. I think I was probably more reassured that there was quite a few all Premier League ties, so that we know that if we go into the next round, some of those big boys will have been knocked out. But yeah, I think most fans with the cup competitions are just happy to enjoy the ride. You know, like a couple of years ago when we had the well, a year ago when we had the Chelsea run. That was quite exciting, and it sort of invigorated our season in a way. And obviously, we would hope for the same effect. But obviously, we don't want to leave it to the next round to continue on. We want to get results in the league. But hopefully, it'll give an added bonus and something else to look forward to.
And Rob, obviously, we were thinking initially, if only we could actually play Huddersfield on a regular basis, all would be well with the world. Having sort of put Paige to them, do you feel reasonably clear that maybe, I don't know, the fourth and fifth round might well be within reach?
Well, we played Bradford City in a pre-season friendly, which was so it's amazing how we keep playing the same teams again and again. Coventry and Huddersfield and Bradford. We had a really big away following for that midweek game. So again, we'll have like a massive following for the game. So yeah, I think it gives us a really good chance and a really good opportunity just to repeat what we've done at away at Huddersfield and Bolton and go on from there. And I think the Bolton game will have given a lot of players confidence. Maybe not Crooks, who limped out of the action. I don't know what the latest is with his injury. Maybe not for him, having scored a good goal. But yeah, it's going to give confidence in the league, and it's always exciting to have a good cup run, and we've got every prospect of being able to do that.
I'm sure there are lots of Tottenham fans who will be bemoaning the presence of a penalty shootout, as indeed, as I say, Sheffield United as well, probably actually not all that happy with the Lincoln Imps doing their particular business. Okay, let's talk predictions and lines with respect to that. I don't think we've had a huge amount of success with respect to this. Let's start off with Sean. What's your prediction for Borough versus QPR?
Well, I'm going to go for a Rob favourite. I'm going to go for a 3-1. I think we'll get back on track. I think we're not quite there yet. Defending as a unit, we're still a little bit easy to get at. Hopefully, that's eradicated in the next in the coming weeks. But yeah, I see us getting a confidence boost in when.
Okay, and would you like to just throw in your thoughts for the two away games, away to Blackburn and away to Sheffield Wednesday? Two interesting games, I think, in all sorts of ways.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Michael Carrick alluded to it a little bit in one of his recent interviews that strategically he may mix things up every now and then. And I wonder if sometimes we might just pack that midfield a little bit more away from home and make us a little bit more solid. And I think O'Brien's signature could impact that further. So I think we'll give a good account of ourselves. I'd go for 4 points from them two games. I'd happily take it, and I'm confident we'll get back on track.
Excellent. Thomas, any thoughts from yourself? Borough, QPR, and then Blackburn Rovers again away.
I do feel confident about the weekend. I think from what I can sense from QPR, from their own fans and from sort of pundit reaction, and even to be honest, from the manager Gareth Ainsworth himself, I think they're in for a tough season. So I'm quite confident we'll get the win. I'll say maybe 2-0 this weekend. And yeah, the away games will be interesting. I think Sheffield Wednesday are another team, to be honest, who haven't started too well. I think Blackburn are a bit of an interesting entity because obviously they've lost players as well, but they always seem to somehow sustain a good campaign, which goes well to the end of the season. So I think maybe hope for wins. Sheffield Wednesday and QPR could be a tougher shout at Blackburn.
Yeah, I think there are a number of Owls fans who are still bemused at why Darren Moore was effectively parted company with the club after, of course, the phenomenal fight back in the playoffs. Rob, are you going to go for 3-1? Your favourite, as Sean has said?
I'm going to go for my old favourite of 2-1, but I hope there's two clear goals really, because I don't want to be biting my nails at the end. But yeah, we need to put away one of these other struggling teams. We didn't do it against Huddersfield, but we need to do it. And then Blackburn looks is always a tough place to go, and yeah, as Thomas says, that they always seem to come back from their disappointments of just missing out. They always seem to just miss out, but then they bounce back even though they've got a diminished team. But I think a draw there, and yeah, victory at Sheffield Wednesday again. Yeah, the scoring of own goals with the dismissing the managers and things like that. So hopefully we can get a win at Hillsborough. It's always a great stadium to go to, but it's even greater when you win.
We'll be back, of course, in time for the visit of former Premier League Southampton to the Riverside, and we'll talk about that at length. But how can people access all the other great stuff we haven't had time to cover in this particular edition of Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast companion to the magazine? Rob.
Yeah, you can still subscribe. And it's if you go to the website fmttmborough.com and click on have a look for the fanzine shop, and the subscription details are in there. And I think there are like a sticky post on the top of the message board as well that you can click on.
It's all technology. It can be electronic tickets and
Yeah.
all sorts of things. There's a great
Yeah.
cartoon in the book which basically says, no, it's not your bus pass or indeed your rail pass, basically. It's easily confused. To Sean Rye, to Thomas Bartley, whose articles you can read in full if you get hold of Fly Me to the Moon, the magazine, and of course, subscribe as well. Huge thanks. And obviously, same to Rob Nichols. Rob, it's time for you to lead us in those usual final words, which hopefully will lead to the first championship win of the season for
Oh, yeah.
Middlesbrough.
Let's hope so. Are we all ready? We will go after three. One, two, three. Come on,
Come
Borough.
on, Borough.
Up the Borough.
Up the Borough.